Data Points podcast, where we discuss all things government and data. I'm your host, Sharon Paley, joined this week by Sheila Dugan, who is GovX's Director of Cities.
Hey, Sharon, it's great to be here.
And it's particularly relevant that you're here today, Sheila, because we're going to be talking about the Bloomberg Philanthropy's mayor challenges and how they impact cities.
Yes, I actually had the pleasure of hosting a couple of the ideation workshops and working with some of the cities on their applications. So I can tell you a little bit about the Mayor's Challenge. It's a competition organized by Bloomberg Philanthropies to collect and fund bold solutions to city problems. Today we'll be joined by Ann Emig from Bloomberg Philanthropies and Julie Rusk, who is the Chief Civic Well-Being Officer from a past Mayor's Challenge winning city, Santa Monica, California.
Right. Santa Monica's Well-Being Project is the first of its kind in the U.S. The city is measuring factors that contribute to well-being, such as personal outlook, environment, health, economic opportunity, and they're aligning all of that to city resources, programs, and policies to drive improvement from those metrics.
Let's go to interview with Julie and Ann to learn a little bit more.
So Ann and Julie, thanks so much for joining us today. Let's start with you, Ann. Can you just give us like a general picture how the Mayor's Challenge came to be and how is it paying dividends for city residents around the world?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And thanks again for having me. So our approach at Bloomberg Philanthropies at the government innovation team is really very simple. We help cities find new and better ways to improve lives. And we take ideas that have worked in one place and help them spread to others. Government innovation is one of five focus areas at Bloomberg Philanthropies. And the programs we run are now working with more than 250 cities around the globe, helping cities and mayors managers find answers to some of the most critical challenges out there in cities. And the Mayor Challenge is one of the core ways that we do that. It encourages cities to generate bold new ideas that solve urban challenges and improve city life, and that, most importantly, have the potential to spread. The competition lasts about a year, and at the end of it, we award one $5 million grand prize and four $1 million finalist grants. So we first launched the U.S. Mayor's Challenge in 2013 and have since run it in Europe, Latin America, and are now back here in the United States yet again. And, you know, as you know, Santa Monica, of course, is one of those winning cities. I'll let Julie tell you more about exactly what she's doing to help put well-being at the center of government's work, something that we're so proud of the work that they've done there. Just to mention another city from our initial U.S. Challenge was Providence, our grand prize winner. They've pioneered a model called Providence Talks to reach children from birth to age three so that they're hearing more words during the critical time when their brains are rapidly developing, something that's essential for ensuring kids enter school ready to succeed. As I mentioned before, in 2014, we ran the competition in Europe. We had a number of different ideas from environmental sustainability to helping blind and visually impaired people navigate their city. Our grand prize winner, Barcelona, has made great progress on its idea of coordinating support from family, friends, neighbors, and professionals so that seniors can help age in place better, something that's a really big issue for many parts of the world. As I mentioned as well, in 2016, we ran the competition in Latin America and the Caribbean and were just really blown away by the response that we received and how excited cities were to participate. And there, the winning ideas ran the gamut and were also really representative of issues in the region, from connecting farmers to local markets and restaurants in Sao Paulo, to combating childhood obesity in Santiago, to tackling corruption and building a more equitable Guadalajara. This year, as I mentioned, we're really thrilled to bring the competition back to the United States where we started, and again, have just been really blown away by the enthusiasm and the hunger from cities to participate in these types of competitions, and we had a record number of cities participating this year as well. We just received applications at the end of October and are in the process of reviewing them, and we had a record number of cities submit, over 324 cities submitted. So really excited to be reviewing those and look forward to kind of sharing more soon about you know, what we saw in those applications and who they are.
Julie, I have a similar question for you. What inspired Santa Monica to develop the Well-Being Project, and how is it changing the life of your residents?
Well, thank you for including us, and we're excited to share a bit about our story. Really what inspired us when we first saw the call for cities across the country to pitch their best ideas that are bold and actionable to improve city government, we were really focused on this idea of using data and streamlining our efforts to really focus on what matters most, which is how people are doing. So the purpose of really what we created in this idea of a well-being index was a way of understanding and defining what community well-being looks like, measuring it, and then working to actively improve it by making sure that our policies, our programs, and the partnerships that local government is responsible for creating are really effective and driving efforts to improve community well-being. So I'd love to tell you a little bit more about that. It's really about using the emerging science and research that has really been growing all over the U.S. and internationally about what leads to the causes and conditions for humans to thrive and do well. And using that science and research, measuring around it, and then using it to more tightly focus and improve what we do in local government.
And since one of the chief criterion for the mayor's challenge is transferability, Julie, can you tell us about how you've seen or how you expect to see other cities apply this approach that Santa Monica has taken to their own governance?
Sure. We've started about the process in the last year or so of replication and transferability, and it's been really helpful to have the leadership of the RAND Corporation, which is our key research partner, as well as working with the team at Bloomberg Philanthropies. So what we've been doing, we started small with this. We put out one of the key features of our index, which is an open source online resident survey that measures well-being. We put this out on our through our networks and on our website, and we offered a fielding guide for tips on how to use it. And what we found is that there was a hunger and a desire on the part of others in cities across the country, large and small, to use things like a survey that's been developed and tested. So that's one example of the kind of toolkit, if you will, and parts and pieces that we have that we can now share. We're working more broadly to develop and publish a playbook that will really help to extract our lessons learned and share tips and really help others to understand what they can do to replicate the framework that we've used, the index, components of the index, as well as to highlight some of our use cases of what we've done to really take this data and turn it into action. So some of the examples of that I think are particularly interesting is we're doing some work with folks in Louisville, both in the city of Louisville as well as in the nonprofit sector, a key partner of the city of Louisville that's kind of working to drive innovation, has taken our framework, which is a way of really organizing, it's sort of an architecture, if you will, for the index. And it's they've really taken that framework and used it to organize some of their engagement around how they think about equity, how they think about innovation, and how they drive their policies in the city and in partnership with the community. So that's been really exciting. We've also been working with folks in the city of the county of Miami, Miami-Dade County's Public Health Department, on how they will use the online survey and really push this out through their public health professionals across the city as a way of giving them more information about the people that they're working with in Miami. And then we've heard from people who are interested in using the framework and using the concepts of well-being as well as the ways of measuring it to help give meaning to things like performance management systems as a way of really building out environmental and sustainability frameworks. So what we've really found is that there's several different ways that cities enter into this, and what we're really seeking to do is to kind of make what we've learned available, have others be able to use components of it or the whole of it, and then that's in turn helped us to make the work we're doing better and really improve it. So it's really these learning networks that are created through replication and transferability are really an opportunity to not only contribute to other cities, but to improve what we're doing right here on the ground in Santa Monica.
I have another question for you, Julie. What has been the biggest benefit to Santa Monica being part of the Mayor's Challenge Selected City?
You know, risk taking is a really hard thing in government, and yet if we're going to really solve the big challenges of our time, and we're going to really improve not only what we do, but most importantly, the trust that our residents and citizens have in what we do, we've got to invest in innovation and in new ways of doing things. So I think it's been an incredibly valuable partnership to have not only the sort of mindset of innovation be really understood and valued from the folks at Bloomberg Philanthropies, but also the funding and the structure to make it really come alive and take. So this combination of understanding the value, not only more than understanding, really championing the value of innovation and the mindset and culture change that's required for innovation, and combining that with investment and structure is just absolutely critical. And then I think beyond that, helping us to take big, bold ideas and make them happen is one thing. But then becoming part of this really exciting and creative network of thought leaders and people inside government and outside government who are working together both in the U.S. and internationally is an incredibly valuable asset. To have a sort of pick-up-the-phone relationship with people in other parts of the world who are really facing, yes, some different challenges, but in many ways, some very universal challenges. For me to be able to know that there's someone I could call in Athens, Greece, is a pretty incredible asset and not something that is really typical in most sort of government associations and networks. So I think this value of learning from each other and seeing that we can be better as we work together and having the really practical steps to do that is just been huge for us here in Santa Monica.
Fantastic. So, Anne, then back to you. You've just run another round of applications for the Mayor's Challenge in the States, like you were saying. Can you maybe give us some like previews of cool things that you've seen proposed there, or, you know, just generally like themes that have materialized? What's, you know, what's next? What can we look forward to coming out of this next round of Mayor's Challenges?
Yeah, sure. And that's, you know, it's one really interesting thing about the Mayor's Challenge and something that there's so much value for us as an organization that invests in cities and just hearing back from cities, what are the issues that are top of mind, and sort of having that viewpoint across so many cities has been, you know, really valuable and really interesting as well. So, yeah, as I mentioned, we had 324 cities submit this year. It's a record number, the most that we've ever had. We're in the early stages of reviewing the applications now and are seeing a few things of note. One is that we got equal representation from, more or less equal representation from cities from every corner of the country. The highest percentage was coming from the South, 31%, 20% are in the Midwest, 26% in the West, and 23% are in the Northeast. So we're really glad to see that sort of equal participation. And one interesting thing is we had really strong participation from small and mid-sized cities. So more than 50%, right at 52% cities are small. And by small, we're saying 30,000 residents to 100,000 residents. So, you know, we're really excited. This is a lot of cities that we haven't worked with in the past. And, you know, they're coming forward saying we have big challenges too, and we have big ideas as well. As far as issues go, there were a few key themes that have surfaced from the applications. We saw that the top three issues that cities were submitting ideas on were health, youth, and jobs. So those three topics account for almost 40% of the applications. You know, not surprisingly, given everything that's happening in a national sort of issue and news context, within that health group of applications, we had a lot of cities focusing on opioids. So of the 47 cities that submitted an idea on health, 18 of those applications are focused on combating the opioid epidemic. Another thing that was a trend that we recognized was about improving how government communicates and interacts with its citizens, a topic that we know is on the mind of many mayors. And then just lastly, another trend, roughly 10% of the ideas were focusing on issues that or ideas that address climate change, clean energy, or energy efficiency. So yeah, overall, you know, based on when we last ran the competition in the United States, a lot more focus on health, housing, and income inequality, as well as jobs, than in our previous round.
I think you've kind of touched on why there might be some like more, some universal changes that might make cities kind of refocus what issues they're trying to tackle. But can you talk to us a little bit, Anne, about how you have gone about getting these smaller size cities involved in the process? Because that seems like an interesting new development.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we worked with a lot of partners who work with those cities, U.S. Conference of Mayors, National League of Cities, the organization ICMA that works with city managers, ELGL. So we really try to tap all of our networks of partners to make sure that all cities who are eligible knew about this opportunity and knew that they could compete. You know, we have several past winners who are in that small to mid-sized range, including the city of Santa Monica. And so just really saying, you know, we're here to hear your best ideas and all cities have sort of a fair shot at competing.
That's great, Julie. Can you tell us more about the index specifically and what you're measuring and how you're seeing that impact outcomes for the residents of Santa Monica?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's really begun to pay many dividends, and it's both in how we are working inside city government, some particular use examples of what we're doing with the data, and how we're creating new partnerships. So I'd love to share a few examples of each. First, how it's changing things inside of city government. As I mentioned, the index is really based on a design that includes a framework, and there's lots of frameworks to measure things within government. But what's really we've had particular resonance for with the well-being framework is this is a way of really getting beyond the typical measurements of either the quantity of work we do, operations in a very functional way, and getting more towards outcome and purpose. So the well-being framework that surrounds our index is really a simple way of looking at the function of things like community, civic engagement, which is one area, health, physical, mental health, learning, which is lifelong learning as well as traditional sources of learning, place and planet, which is really a huge area for cities. We do so much both with our physical infrastructure, but we're all really quite focused on how we take care of our natural environment and climate. We measure that in place and planet. And finally, economic opportunity, which is both looking at the economic ecosystem as well as how people are doing economically within that ecosystem. And all of that is really further measured by looking at how people are doing. So sort of the reports of people's physical, mental health and things that we measure in an area we call outlook. So this framework has become a way of now organizing the outcomes and the impact of city government. And it's been really exciting to have that become part of our budgeting process so that as departments really look at what they're doing, they're not only reporting or describing what they do in terms of program activities and line items in an individual budget, but they're individual department budget, but they're really beginning to look at the alignment across different departments within this framework. So use of the framework is provides internal value, but it also helps us in communicating and engaging with our residents. And we've really found that the public and our residents really appreciate understanding the purpose of many of the things that we're offering within this more outcome-oriented framework. Then some specific examples of what we've done with findings. Most recently, we just launched a great pilot with Fitbit. So we're really engaging with one of the neighborhoods in Santa Monica that had particularly low levels of physical activity. And we know physical activity matters. It's a good proxy for physical health. We also know that by getting people out there and physically active, they're interacting with their friends and neighbors. And we know that this is important for the social capital of a community. So we've partnered with Fitbit and their research company, Fitabase, to do one of the first engagement opportunities for their company using this tool for 140 people in the neighborhood to really find out more about their exercise and physical activity patterns. People opted into this. They've agreed to share some basic information that's aggregated. It's not about telling people what to do and being prescriptive, but it's really about providing some tools, and we've really found people are very excited about it. We've also done a couple of other things in partnering with our farmers markets and doing some things to improve consumption of healthy, you know, fruits and vegetables and healthy eating. We're moving the dial on kindergarten readiness, and we're doing some things to really embed the findings into our planning and zoning policies with our planning department. So there's been a lot of ways we've begun to use the findings, which have really helped to focus us on what our residents need. And then finally, in the area of partnerships, we've got a great new partnership with Kaiser Health that's really helping us to message on this, taking data points and resources in the community and helping to turn those into very short sound bites and action statements for the public that's been really well received. We've got a new partnership going with Sidewalk Labs to get more data about mobility patterns around the city. So what we found in all of these is that there's ways that city government, in use of the framework and thinking about the work we do that's more outcome-oriented, use examples around particular findings, and then stimulating new partnerships have all been some of the value that's come out of creating this framework and index for our community.
And I have one more question for you. What happens next? When should cities expect to hear back from you?
Yeah, sure. So we're in a very intense reading period right now where we, the thing is when you get a lot of applications, you then have to actually read them. So that's what we're doing at the moment. And then we'll be working with our selection committee to evaluate all the applications based on our criteria of vision, impact, ability to implement, and transferability. And then we will be naming up to 35 champion cities at the end of January. And those cities will actually get up to $100,000 to go out and test some of these ideas, see if some of their assumptions and hypotheses are correct, and learn a lot from that process. And then those 35 champion cities will submit a final application at the end of the summer of next year, and we'll announce our 5 winners in the fall of 2018.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. And if folks want to learn more about the Mayor's Challenge or what's happening in Santa Monica, we'll have that in our show notes so that they can learn more about it there.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Juliana.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Julie and Ann for joining us today. For more information on the Bloomberg's Mayor's Challenge or any information covered in this episode, please check our podcast show notes. You can find show notes and other GovX resources on our website at govx.jhu.edu and learn more about the work we're doing by following us on Twitter and Instagram at gov_X, like your ex-boyfriend.
So
So if you enjoyed this episode or any episode, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Your support for it means a lot. Many thanks to Sheila for being my co-host this week. And we look forward to talking to you all next time to find out where the data points.